The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Oral questions put by members to ministers. The time is now 3:37. We will finish at 5:07. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, on Monday night of this week, the Minister of Fisheries and Environment was asked to release details of a contract of a lease agreement that was signed between his department and the Cornwallis Park Development Association. On Monday night, the Minister said he was unable or unwilling to release the details of that arrangement. Yesterday, the Premier said that he would disclose the details of that lease. Mr. Speaker, so my question to the Premier is, when can we expect to see the details of that lease?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I think there's, as I mentioned to the press outside just a short time ago, I think there's a fair amount of misinformation about this that has been for some reason, either by way of rumor or inquiry more than anything else, which is this, is that there is an agreement to lease. There is not a lease in place at this time. I have asked for that file to come back to our office for review. I know there have been questions about it. I have similar kinds of questions, but again, I think, as I've said, it is at this point just the subject of speculation. So I want to see what's actually in it make sure that all of the information is properly released when it can all be released at once.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, details of this lease are finding its way out through different sources from the community and quite frankly, Mr. Speaker, here in Halifax. Mr. Speaker, the property in question that the government has leased just recently sold to Cornwallis Development Association for $162,000. Mr. Speaker, on Monday night, the minister told the media and all members who were there that the lease arrangement is for $287,000 per year, Mr. Speaker. So my question to the Premier, how can signing a lease for $287,000 for 10 years, almost $3 million from the taxpayers of Nova Scotia, to lease a building from an organization that just paid $162,000 is a good deal for today's families?
Yeah. Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, this is exactly the kind of misinformation that we're talking about. The reality is that there is an amalgamation of a number of departments going in. It's not just a building. There are garage facilities. There's a helipad. There's a whole lot of other land that is included in that lease arrangement. It also includes somewhere between $850,000 and $1 million worth of fit-up costs that are associated with the lease, Mr. Speaker. So I think what we need to do, certainly, and as I said, we're certainly willing to release all of this this information at an appropriate time once we've had an opportunity to bring it all together, because, of course, I think, as all Nova Scotians do, want to make sure that this is the right arrangement for that community and the right arrangement for the taxpayers of Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Question: the Premier said he didn't know much about the lease and about the arrangements that were made, and to now he's rhyming off a number of scenarios, Mr. Speaker. The Premier knows full well the full details around this arrangement. What he knows now, though, is that the media and this caucus has caught the fact that this government has signed a lease that is unacceptable to taxpayers of Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, this is the same government that gave away $590 million to six companies who laid off 13,010 Nova Scotians. This is the same premier that stood in this house yesterday and said that the Nalcor deal was a great deal for Nova Scotia, yet he can't tell us how much it costs. He can't tell us what it means to power bills across Nova Scotia. This is the same premier that's standing before us now telling us it's a good idea for the taxpayers of Nova Scotia to lease a building for $3 million that was just paid $162 million. So my question to the premier is $62,000. So my question to the premier, is it his government's inexperience or are they just not up to the task of government?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I just want to correct the Leader of the Opposition said it was $162 million. I don't know where he got that figure from. That's obviously incorrect. But if there is inexperience, it would certainly be in the caucus of the Liberal Party in not understanding the way in which leases are arranged. They include not just the purchase price, but they include a whole suite of improvements that have to be done. But you know, Mr. Speaker, I think it's a little bit ironic that it is this party that is making this kind of allegation. And I want to table for you, if I might get the attention of the page. This is the news story. This is the news story, Mr. Speaker, about the Liberal Party of Nova Scotia that signed a deal that included 20 years of locking in the province of Nova Scotia on the Sable offshore royalty deal on the day that they were defeated.
The Honourable Member for Argyle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Staying in the same vein, my question is to the Minister of Fisheries. As reported in allnovascotia.com, the NDP government agreed to spend $133,500 per year to lease an Annapolis County building that sold last week for $162,500. This group will make $1.1 million off their investment from this government's lease. Mr. Speaker, that's a return of 721%. That's a return that's even better than Nova Scotia Power shareholders get. All expenses included, the rent comes to about $289,000 per year. So my question to the minister, Mr. Speaker, is what precautions were taken to make sure that taxpayers were not paying more than they should for this space?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries.
Mr. Speaker, I defer the question to the Premier.
Honourable the Premier.
I want to thank the minister for allowing the opportunity to deal with the question, because first of all, I think it's an important one. One of the things that we want to ensure is that the people of the province always get the best value for their money. And in this case, Mr. Speaker, what you have is a nonprofit community development organization, one that runs services for those communities, including cadets and other organizations. So, Mr. Speaker, the lease arrangement with them is based on a good value business case, and the idea is that the lease would include all of the facilities, the garage, the helipad. It would include, as I said earlier, almost $850,000 to $1 million in fit-up costs. So what I've asked to be done is to have that file sent back for review so that we can make sure that the business case was set out properly and that it accomplishes its aims. Because the aims, Mr. Speaker, here is to ensure that good jobs end up in rural Nova Scotia and that we assist communities in rural Nova Scotia that need assistance.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on his first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Now, we all agree that moving departments to rural areas is a good idea. The Premier said yesterday that it would be, actually as of yesterday, he said that the move would be cost neutral, but this government has shown, of course, no proof of that. Now it sounds like the Premier has it on hold as he reviews it. Yesterday, the Minister of Fisheries said, we think it's a fair market value. So, by the way of determining fair market value is to tender the space, but this government thinks that they know better, of course, than anyone else. So my question, Mr. Speaker, to the Minister of Fisheries, it was his file, was moving the Department of Fisheries employees an emergency, such as the emergency used to bypass tendering process for Ship Start Here PR campaign, or what other excuse does the minister have for not making sure that he was getting the best possible price for taxpayers?
Honourable the Minister of Fisheries.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, again, I defer the question to the Premier of Nova Scotia.
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you. Again, I'd like to thank the Minister of Fisheries for allowing me an opportunity to answer the question. The reality is that we're dealing with a cooperative or a non-for-profit organization. As the member opposite knows, there are specific procurement rules that were followed by the government when dealing with not-for-profits. And I hope he would know that because, of course, this is something that the former Conservative government did, I think, four times.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on his final supplementary.
Here, the NDP refused to say on Monday just how much they would spend on this 10-year lease. Then Tuesday, they dragged their feet, releasing the information after repeated inquiries. Now, when the information seems to be available to the media, of course, the Premier all of a sudden takes some interest in this and takes it away from his Minister of Fisheries, being the good principal of that school of the NDP. Mr. Speaker, the question I'll try to ask is very simple. Will the Premier release all documentation, including how the decision was made to select this site in Cornwallis, at such a high cost, or will he continue to hide the information from taxpayers? And when will he tell taxpayers just how much he's spending of their money?
Honourable the Premier,
Mr. Speaker, quite the opposite. Of course. It's an open and transparent process. It's being dealt with I don't know what the opposition has or why they think that a community development organization somehow is an illicit organization to try and deal with. I mean, Mr. Speaker, we are working with a community group to ensure that departments get the best possible place for them to be able to deliver those services, Mr. Speaker. So we have no problem with the release of the information. I said we are going to review the file. Once we've finished reviewing the file, we'll release the information.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Speaker, again, Mr. Speaker, on Monday night, the Minister of Fisheries said that they would not be releasing the details in around this lease. Mr. Speaker, for the last 2 days, the Premier has said that he would be releasing that information. Now he needs to review it. But my question is for the Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal. Could the Minister tell us what role his department played in this lease?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member opposite for the question. As the member would know, I don't personally get involved in each lease arrangement, but I can tell you that my staff was in the area looking at what was available. This was a property that was looked at and considered to be apt. There are a number of considerations when you're looking at a property. One of them, of course, is who's going to use it. And in this case, we're amalgamating three separate departments in one area. That means that we're going to save up to $1.5 or $1.6 million on renovating the DNR facilities. So that was part of the mix as well. So at this particular stage, my position is that we've looked at these things, and we are comfortable with the position we've taken on looking at this space. I should point out, and I'm very pleased that the Premier has indicated to me that he wants to look at the file as well, because for me, I think that's an important thing. I always welcome someone coming and reviewing. The work that we do at the department, and particularly when it's the Premier, it gives me great confidence that he's going to do that. So thank you for that question.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Minister for that. First of all, the Minister mentioned that a number of his staff had gone down to review other properties in the area to look at other buildings. I wonder if the Minister would be prepared to make that information available to this House of what other buildings they looked at, because, quite frankly, the Premier has said there was no tender. There's an untendered agreement that was made between a non-profit organization in Cornwallis area. And furthermore, to the Minister, you're comfortable with this deal. If you're so comfortable with this deal, why are we putting the brakes on it today?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation Infrastructure Renewal.
First of all, I want to say this, to me, this is a very good news story. We're bringing jobs from Halifax, and we're moving them into rural communities. I should say that the member opposite who asked the question will be benefiting, because a lot of these jobs, if it comes to Cornwallis, will be in his riding. Is the member opposite saying that he's not? Well, there's no lease signed. You've been told that by the Premier. There's no lease signed. And the document we have signed gives us the right to review the lease, and the Premier, using his prerogative, has said that that's what he wants to do. So that's what we will do. This is a positive news story for Nova Scotia. We're taking... The third party had an opportunity to move jobs to rural Nova Scotia. They didn't take it. Is the member opposite suggesting that he doesn't want jobs in rural Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's a job at any cost, I guess, Mr. Speaker. The Minister is suggesting that it is okay that his department signs an agreement for $3 million on a property that sold a few days ago for $162,000. Mr. Speaker, this is at a time, Mr. Speaker, when they're closing emergency rooms across the province. This is at a time when they're taking $65 million out of public education for our children, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, and the minister stands up and suggests that people are against jobs in rural Nova Scotia because they dare question the fact that his department is spending $3 million to lease a property that was sold for $162,000. Mr. Speaker, with all due respect to the minister, the Premier has now become involved in this. I want to ask the Minister, who in his department authorized the signing of this agreement in his department?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation Infrastructure Renewal.
Well, again, as long as the thank you, Mr. Speaker. As long as the member opposite recognizes that this is not a lease that's been signed, that it's an agreement to enter into a lease, and we have the opportunity to review this, that's what we intend to do. My understanding, and I don't have the name of the person who signs the documents. There are 2,200 people working at TIR, and I haven't had an opportunity to meet all of them. I don't know. I certainly didn't sign a lease, so I know that hasn't happened yet, and it would be up to me to sign it. So if you need the name of the person who actually did that, I'll get that for you. That shouldn't be a difficulty. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, on Thursday, October 25th, the Premier stood in this House and he said, and I quote, Employment is up and unemployment is down. End of quote. In the last year, Nova Scotia has shed 8,600 full-time jobs. They've added 13,500 part-time jobs in that same period, Mr. Speaker. The unemployment rate is down because this Premier and this government are creating a race to the bottom and forcing Nova Scotians into part-time employment. This is an accomplishment that the Premier is boasting about. So my question to the Premier, does the Premier really believe that someone working in part-time job is really better, as well off as someone in a full-time job, or is it just his inexperience?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I think if the Leader of the Opposition had a little experience reading stats, maybe he'd get them right. Simple fact, the matter is that the amount of employment in Nova Scotia since June of 2009 are up 8,800 jobs. The participation rate is up, Mr. Speaker. The employment rate is up. Those are all good things for the province of Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Premier celebrates his so-called economic victories, but Nova Scotians aren't celebrating. This government's economic development policies are placing our province in a race to the bottom, Mr. Speaker, and Nova Scotians are suffering. In December of 2008, there were 39,800 unemployed Nova Scotians. That was in the middle of the recession. Today, there are 43,400 unemployed Nova Scotians under this NDP government. So my question to the Premier, with more unemployed Nova Scotians now than during the recession, why is the Premier celebrating his so-called economic victories, or is it just his inexperience?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, you know, it's laughable. You've got a guy over there, you've got a leader of the opposition who had to hire a consultant to figure out how to operate his own office. You know, I mean, the biggest budget he's ever had to manage, Mr. Speaker. The simple fact of the matter is that the whole world has gone through recession.
Order, please. The Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the simple fact of the matter is that the whole world is going through recessionary pressures. You see what's happening in the United States. You see the sovereign debt crisis in Europe. And what's happening here in Nova Scotia is, in fact, for most people, what they see is progress being made in their economy. June of 2009, what we've seen is a steady string of announcements around new jobs that are coming into the province. We've won the largest industrial contract in the history of our province, Mr. Speaker, and you see even now the Statistics Canada reporting that there are 8,800 more jobs in the province than there was when we came to power.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, in his first answer, he was celebrating all the good things going on in the economy of Nova Scotia. In his second answer, he was blaming all the bad things going on in the economy of Nova Scotia on someone else, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, yesterday the Premier said, and I quote, job growth is going in the right direction, end of quote. So the Premier's content with more part-time work, more low-paid work, and fewer full-time jobs. The Premier seems pleased that he watched six companies, corporations lay off more than 1,300 Nova Scotians after taking $590 million out of the pockets of the taxpayers of this Scotia with the help of our Premier. Nova Scotians are working twice as hard because this government has a habit of writing big checks to big business, and the Premier seems to be content with Nova Scotians being laid off. So my question to the Premier, why is this government forcing Nova Scotians into part-time work, and why does the Premier think that's going in the right direction?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I don't know if the Leader of the Opposition really thinks that what he's saying is believed by anyone, because it's not. I mean, people understand, maybe by the few people that sat behind him, but the reality is that you know, there was $300 million invested in order to win 10,000 jobs, Mr. Speaker. A commercial loan advanced at a commercial rate that can only be forgiven if they actually hit the job targets, Mr. Speaker. In addition, that will generate more than $2 billion in tax revenues. If the Leader of the Opposition can't see the virtue of that equation, then that is inexperience writ large.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Speaking of jobs, under the NDP, Nova Scotia has become an expensive national playground for those that are seeking to set new precedents in our country under their new labour laws like first contract arbitration. Yesterday, we learned that even our amateur hockey players are not safe from this new trend, Mr. Speaker, as we learned that the Cape Breton Screaming Eagles have received an application from a national union to organize, and I will table the statement from the Screaming Eagles when they indicate that they received an application from the Canadian Hockey League Players Association seeking to certify our children amateur hockey players under their union. I'll table that for the benefit of the House. Mr. Speaker, fact of the matter is that it is the fans, the hockey families, and the fans of Nova Scotia that will pay the price for this expensive new national playground that the NDP have set up for union drives. My question to the Premier, will he now concede that he has created an expensive national playground for new union drives and his hockey families that are going to end up paying the price?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I always love when the contrast between the opposition parties is so distinct. Just not more than 30 seconds ago, I was the friend of big business, and now I'm the friend of big labour, Mr. Speaker. The truth of the matter is, we are just the champions. We are just the champions of the people, Mr. Speaker. That's the only people we work for. Mr. Speaker, perhaps the leader of the Conservative Party would have a look at the actual facts, and he would discover that the organizing drive for the CHLPA actually began in Alberta, that bastion of union democracy.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Premier may be wondering who his friends are, but I can assure this House is certainly not a friend of the thousands of Nova Scotians who are out looking for work, who don't get a bailout from his government, but do get a hockey stick in the rear end when they're faced with these kinds of pro-union labour laws. But, Mr. Speaker, in case the government doesn't think this is a serious issue, in case the Premier doesn't think this is a serious issue, it's not only about hockey. It's not only about the expense that our hockey fans will have to take. It is actually about all of those companies out there seeking to employ a few Nova Scotians here, because they, too, are under the gun. Companies like Egg Films, for example, a Nova Scotia success story, a small business treating their employees well, who themselves were subject to a national union, in this case the IATSE union, coming to town because they believe Nova Scotia is now the place to go if you want to attack companies like Egg Films. In fact, their president, Sarah Thomas, says, and I quote, that this national union bullied its way here, representing casual workers who don't even work 10 to 15 days a year for her company in order to set a new national precedent. And I will table the remarks of Sarah Thomas of Egg Films, Mr. Speaker.
A minute and a half.
So my question to the Premier, with hundreds of small business leaders like Sarah Thomas speaking up in defense of good jobs in Nova Scotia, while the Premier goes on with his own expensive playground agenda, what does he say to those small business employers trying to hire a few of their fellow Nova Scotians when they're faced with this kind of backlash?
Honourable the Premier.
In response to that question, what I say is, if you're going to play hockey, wear a helmet.
The Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the simple fact of the matter is that none of these, the CHLPA is a question of certification. It's not a question of contract. I mean, I think even those people who understand nothing about labour law could at least understand that.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
You know, Mr. Speaker, if the Premier wanted to give a complete and accurate answer to that last question, what he could have said was, if you want to come to Nova Scotia, invest in our province, and hire a few of our people, get a lawyer, because that's what companies like Egg Films are facing. That's what hockey clubs like the Cape Breton Screaming Eagles and the Halifax Mooseheads are facing. And what a shame. What a loss of investment and opportunity for our fellow Nova Scotians, because he is determined to force through first contract arbitration and let Nova Scotia be the breeding ground for these kinds of anti-job actions. Though I will ask the Premier at this time, when there are Nova Scotia families who are tuning to food banks, working Nova Scotians that can't make enough, that they need to go to food banks, Mr. Speaker, will he explain to them why he's allowing working Nova Scotians abused as guinea pigs in his national union agenda?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I've never heard such a load of nonsense in my life. I got to tell you, this has nothing to do with certification. The legislation that's been introduced had nothing to do. It had nothing to do with any of the decisions that he's mentioned. Mr. Speaker, the next thing I know, the leader of the Conservative Party is going to be blaming the NHL lockout on me. What I can tell him about that is that there is a guy from Coal Harbour who's on the NHL bargaining committee. It's just not me.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
You hear? After that answer, I can hear NHL players rejoicing all across the nation.
Mr. Speaker, yesterday the Premier stood in this house and said, and I quote, "We have young people finally able to get jobs in our province," end of quote. However, one of the hardest hit segments of our province is our youth. Since the NDP has taken office, young Nova Scotians have been seen unemployment levels, Mr. Speaker, as high as increasing by almost 20% under his watch. So my question to the Premier is, why didn't the Premier know what the state of the youth employment was in Nova Scotia, or is it just his inexperience?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, if you want to see inexperience, what you should do is just look at some of the research that's being done on behalf of the Liberal Party. Simple fact of the matter is that there is an enthusiasm and there is a forward-looking air with young people today in this province. Last night, I happened to be over at the Fusion Halifax, event, where we had young people talking about how great the future looks in Nova Scotia. Fact of the matter is that the students who come to Dalhousie, many of them, or other universities here, many of them are staying. They're choosing to make their life here. They are seeing for the first time on the horizon prosperity that we have not seen for 20 years, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Like John Buchanan's back in town, the offshore is coming someday, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, if there's a single young Nova Scotian happy about the future, is they realize in the election in their future, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Premier seems to think young Nova Scotians are doing well in an economy that his government has created. None of the data supports his belief. The truth is, since the NDP have taken office, young people in Nova Scotia are facing 20% fewer job opportunities. Even more concerning, Mr. Speaker, is the trend of part-time work replacing full-time employment. Nova Scotians between the ages of 20 and 24 years of age saw a drop of full-time jobs of 31% and part-time work increasing by 43%, Mr. Speaker, under this NDP government. Mr. Speaker, those are exactly the young people who are saddled with tens of thousands of dollars of debt, desperately needing work experience, and are making a choice of whether to stay in Nova Scotia or not. So my question to the Premier, why is this government pursuing an economic race to the bottom that is forcing our sons and daughters to move out west? Or is it his experience?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I would start by reminding the leader of the Liberal Party that it was actually a former Liberal Premier that talked about the future of the offshore, not John Buchanan, Mr. Speaker, held up the vial of oil and talked about the offshore. The reality is, the reality of the situation is, Mr. Speaker, that we are creating more jobs in this province, and in fact, we've created more seats in community college in order to be able to train more young people so that they will be able to stay in this province because they're gonna have good jobs. Mr. Speaker, do you know that for the first time there are actually signs up out west advertising for jobs back here in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the slogan across communities across this province has been, let's go take a seat at community college. Maybe we'll get a part-time job under the NDP government, Mr. Speaker, because they're perfectly content, Mr. Speaker. This negative economic environment is not limited to rural Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. Halifax is bleeding young people as well. The 2012 Halifax Vital Statistics Report shows in the last decade we have seen under 15 population drop by more than five times the national average. In that same period, the 30 to 40-year demographic also shrunk by 13%. Young people and young families said they are leaving because of poor job prospects. So my question to the Premier, when will the Premier realize that his bad economic policies are driving people out of this province, or is it just his inexperience?
Yeah. Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, you want to see inner experience in action, it's that kind of question. He would know that after 20 years of the worst economic performance in the country under Liberal and Conservative governments, we are turning it around, Mr. Speaker. We got a big mess to clean up, but we're doing it.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Minister of Economic Development. For the past 4 years, including this year, the Minister's Department has sent to each Regional Development Authority a $125,000, a total of over $1 million a year for each of those years. That money is supposed to be used for local, regional economic development. Now, Mr. Speaker, from time to time, the Nova Scotia Association of Regional Development Authorities has an annual meeting and a conference. And I want to ask the minister where that conference was held last year in 2011 and whether he attended that conference.
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Minister. I think now, I could be wrong because I've attended so many things, but I think that might have been in Fox Harbour. Now, don't take that to the bank because there have been a number of conferences that I attended, but I will check that out for sure, and I was there, and I've attended a
Saturday
number
night.
Of conferences by the RDAs.
The Honourable Leader of the Official the Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I can assure the minister I will not be taking Fox Harbour to the bank. However, I will refresh his memory because indeed the conference was held at Fox Harbour Golf Resort and Spa, a place that boasts both rich accommodations and warm hospitality, a place, according to its website, which is where you go to discover the joy found in life's finer pleasures. Mr. Speaker, the conference cost taxpayers of this province $700 for each attendee there, in addition to $15,000 to pay for CBC's Rex Murphy to be one of the keynote speakers, along with the Minister of Economic Development. At a time when Nova Scotians are being told to tighten their belts, when the NDP is cutting back in schools and hospitals, I asked the minister, why did the minister endorse such a flagrant abuse of taxpayers' money by agreeing to go and attend such an extravagant conference?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I just for the record, I will say, reiterate, I did attend, and I didn't charge anything for myself to be there. The decision to have this at Fox Harbour was made by the RDA Association. I simply got an invite, which I thought, as Minister of Economic and Rural Development, it was more than appropriate for me to be there, and I went.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the point is that money, the $1 million his department sends to RDAs, is to be used for regional economic development, not fancy conferences at Fox Harbour. This is a time when, in the last 3 years, 6,300 full-time jobs have been lost outside of Halifax. But instead of creating jobs in rural areas, the RDAs, under the supervision of this minister, attended a conference at Fox Harbour, costing $700 each. Fox Harbour, by the way, whose website says that they invite visitors, such as our RDA delegates, such as the Minister of Economic Development, to, and I quote, savor melt-in-your-mouth Atlantic lobster, flavorful Tatamagush rack of lamb, superb wines from our exemplary cellar, and an array of enticing signature desserts. My question, Mr. Speaker, for the minister, will he explain to those many struggling Nova Scotians, those many unemployed Nova Scotians, whether going to Fox Harbour to such a fancy conference is part of his jobs here strategy?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, what I will do is I'm not going to give you any fictional numbers. I'm going to give you facts, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it is a fact that since June 2009 to this date, we created 8,800 jobs in the province of Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, it is a fact, Mr. Speaker, that we've invested millions in the urban shipbuilding contract to create billions of dollars for Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker. That's a fact. Mr. Speaker, it is a fact that with this investment of millions of dollars in the urban shipyard building the combat ships, we will create 11,500 jobs at the peak, Mr. Speaker. Those are the facts, Mr. Speaker. That's not fiction.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism, and I'm glad he's in the mood to share some facts, because we certainly need some on DSME Trenton. This government spent $60 million for a 49% equity stake in DSME. In return, we were promised 500 jobs. As of August 3, 2012, the minister said approximately 66 people were employed at the plant. My question for the minister, how many people are currently employed at DSME?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, there are, without a doubt, less than 60 people employed at DSMT. Mr. Speaker, as I said yesterday, is that this is a new company for Nova Scotia, that there were some things that happened with respect to a new company that are simply unpredictable when it comes to the global economy. Mr. Speaker, we are dealing with a company from Korea, that there had to be some cultural adjustments for this company as well. Mr. Speaker, what I can tell you, and again, if we want to deal with facts, that this company is in the business of planning and marketing itself globally, Mr. Speaker. I've got confidence in this government, this company, Mr. Speaker, and it will be successful.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, on August 3, 2012, the minister said, quote, if we foretell the future, and I would think if we knew where the energy market was going when it came to windmills, I'm not sure if DSMT would have been talking to us at all, end quote. During the same post-cabinet scrum, the minister admitted he did not know which markets the SME had access to. He admits the company is struggling. He admits he doesn't know their marketing plan, but he still insists he is cautiously optimistic, and I'll table those quotes. Mr. Speaker, my question. Will the minister share the organization's business plan that allows him to remain cautiously optimistic after the fact that there are 60 people remaining working at the SME in Trenton today?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, what I will table today for the member opposite, who despite my invitations, haven't taken me up on my offer, I will table the jobs here strategy, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, I would encourage him to read that, Mr. Speaker. I will also table, Mr. Speaker, and if I may, Mr. Speaker, I just want to read something very, very recent from the Halifax Chamber of Commerce. In summary, and I quote, overall, as noted earlier, since 2009, the government of Nova Scotia has generally done a good job acting on the commitments laid out in the 2009 election campaign and should be applauded for their efforts and dedication. It is important to keep in mind that this government came into office after economic challenging times. And there's more. I will table that, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Minister's department is responsible for investing taxpayers' dollars to generate employment and help develop economic opportunities in this province. So if the minister wants to meet, what I want to know is, will he be available and willing to tell me how he failed Nova Scotians with $60 million of their money in Trenton? That's my question for the minister.
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Mr. Speaker, this government has protected jobs in the province of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. An example of that is the 1,400 jobs that we protected in Cape Breton, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, if we didn't do that, Mr. Speaker, there would be families in this province that would be left out. There would not be 14,000 people employed in that area today, Mr. Speaker. In fact, Mr. Speaker, those people would be looking for jobs in Western Canada, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the federal government received a request on the Access to Information legislation to make public the umbrella agreement that the federal government signed with the Irving Shipyard in Halifax. They agreed to release parts of those agreements. Irving Shipbuilding initially requested the court stop the release of this information, but withdrew the request. Now, both the federal government and Irving Shipbuilding are in agreement with that information should be made public. Mr. Speaker, does the Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism agree that a key condition of spending public money or accepting public money is being open to public scrutiny?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the federal shipbuilding contract is probably the single most important event that certainly has happened in my lifetime. Mr. Speaker, at the peak of it, we are going to create 11,500 jobs, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we are proud to say, and we will continue to say, the role that this government had in assisting Irving in securing that contract, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, anything that we do, we will not jeopardize the relationship that we have with Irving Shipbuilding. We are proceeding very, very carefully. We are not rushing into this. We are taking our time at it. And because, Mr. Speaker, we want to do it right, not like previous other governments.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the contract was won by Irving Shipbuilding on merit. The competition is over. Details of the umbrella agreement are forthcoming. The federal government is willing to let the public know the facts. Irving Shipbuilding is willing to let the public know the facts. Why, Mr. Speaker, is the minister the only person unwilling to tell Nova Scotia the facts behind the $304 million that it gave to Irving Shipbuilding? most of it, which will never be repaid to the taxpayers.
He don't know.
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, once again, the Irving Shipbuilding got that contract with the help of the province of Nova Scotia. If it hadn't have been, and Mr. Irving said this himself, if it hadn't been for the province of Nova Scotia, he said, we would never have won that contract, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we are at the table with Irving, and we are creating jobs for Nova Scotians, 11,500 jobs at the peak.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Minister allowed $260 million of the loan he approved for Irving Shipbuilding to be forgivable. A giveaway, a handout, costing every Nova Scotian $325 per person. What, Mr. Speaker, is the Minister hiding, and why is the Minister and the NDP government the only ones keeping secrets now?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we have invested millions of dollars in that Irving bid. We've invested millions, and we're going to get billions back. We will earn $2.8 billion, Mr. Speaker, giving us more money to invest in health care, to invest in education for Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this is an investment. Part of the money that we've invested in Irving will earn forgiveness based on milestones reached in terms of job, Mr. Speaker. This is a wise investment, a 6% investment, $2.8 billion, Mr. Speaker. They don't want that. They don't want that for Nova Scotians. Well, I can tell you, this government wants it.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The OECD calculates the rate of return on investing in education at roughly 9%. This is an impressive return for any investment. Given this NDP government's insistence on cutting education funding, it would seem that this government sees post-secondary education funding as a burden rather than an investment, Mr. Speaker, which is completely backwards. Will the Premier tell the members of this House whether he, the Minister of Finance, or the Minister of Labour and Education, considered the rate of return on education investments before it slashed $100 million from our universities?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to just correct the member opposite. When we came into government, there was a fund of money that was a result of a trust that was set up between the federal and provincial governments, and it provided every year for the reduction of tuition in the province. And in fact, the year that we came in, that came to an end
by the feds.
And the federal government has not replenished that fund. So that meant that before we even looked at things like the inflationary costs that are associated with maintaining universities, salary increases, all of that, the first thing we had to do was backfill some $30 million associated with that. Had we not done that, the cost of tuition in this province would have gone up by 20%. But, Mr. Speaker, what we did do was we made sure that the students were shielded from those increases, and they had to make some modest contribution towards the inflationary costs associated with it. But that's what we did, Mr. Speaker. We helped protect students from the real costs associated with the end of federal funding.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on his first supplementary.
This is what this Premier does. He stands up and blames everybody else for decisions that he's made. This Premier cut $100 million out of our post-secondary education system. He says we didn't have money to put into it. Well, where'd they get the $600 million, Mr. Speaker, to give to six corporations in this province? They had $600 million for six corporations that laid off 1,300 people, but didn't have $100 million to invest in our education system, Mr. Speaker. And the province is going to hurt. Universities inject $805.2 million into Nova Scotia's economy every year.
Universities are an economic driver for the province and are responsible annually for about $968 million in gross domestic product, $227 million in tax revenue, and $4.39 billion in economic output, Mr. Speaker. Unfortunately, this Premier doesn't care about any of that and chooses to cut education instead. My question to the Premier is, Mr. Speaker, students in universities are wondering why the Premier has endless amounts of cash for corporations. The Deputy Premier might find this funny, but I assure him students and their families don't. Why did he find all this money for six corporations, Mr. Speaker, but had to cut $100 million out of our universities? Here.
Honorable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think the first thing that the member for Yarmouth ought to do is maybe get a math lesson. The simple fact of the matter is that not only did we backfill the $30 million, we're not blaming the federal government. We're just acknowledging the fact that first thing we had to do was backfill all of that. And then we brought forward the graduate retention tax rebate, Mr. Speaker, in order to make sure that young people who were graduating had incentives to stay in the province. Then, Mr. Speaker, we brought in a debt cap that ensured that students in our province would not continue to have excessive debts. The reality of the situation in this province is that this government, the men and women who make up this caucus, have invested more money in students and student assistance than any government in the history of the province, with the exception of the advent of the student loan program.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on his final supplementary.
This is what we risk by cutting our education system, Mr. Speaker, a Premier that doesn't know how to do math. We have cut $100 million out of our education system. The Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives lists Nova Scotia as the least affordable jurisdiction for post-secondary education, and yet we have a Premier that stands up and brags about all the great things he's doing for our university, for our universities. Mr. Speaker, will the Premier stand in this House today and tell the very students who supported him while in opposition that his government will stand up for students, reverse his funding cuts to universities, and deny any tuition increases coming out of the review?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I already pointed out, and there's a big difference between student assistance on the one hand and making sure that people have access to university and the question of tuition. People often equate them, but they are not the same. The simple fact of the matter is that we have made sure that assistance to students has continued to grow so that more young people will be able to take advantage of the great universities that we have here in our province. We want to ensure that if you have the capacity, the ability, not only to go to university, but to go to community college. We increase the number of seats in community college so that young people will have access to trades. And yes, we invested money in things like the largest industrial shipbuilding contract in our history, so that when these people graduate, when the engineering class graduates, they will have jobs. When the sheet metal workers class graduates, they will have jobs. When the plumbers graduate, they will have jobs. Mr. Speaker, we care about the young people of this province, and we want to make sure that they have the education they need and they get the jobs they deserve.
The Honourable Member for Richmond.
Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians and communities throughout our province are upset at the Premier's interference in the work of the Electoral Boundaries Commission. The Premier and the NDP government ordered the Commission to eliminate the protected ridings of Clare, Argyle, Preston, and Richmond. One of the casualties of the Premier's interference has been the riding of Shelburne. The Premier feels that the residents of Shelburne were not heard by the Commission and therefore has decided that the Law Amendments Committee will meet in Shelburne. Could the Premier advise the House today and all Nova Scotians what other Nova Scotia communities negatively impacted by the Boundaries Report will be visited by the Law Amendments Committee?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, it's a Boundary Commission report. In fact, they went to those communities, and many of them, they met with the residents who were there. They met with the terms of reference that was decided by the House of Assembly, Mr. Speaker, and they produced a report, as I pointed out, that did not address the position in Shelburne. So we think it's only fair that they have a voice. The fact of the matter is that other places have had an opportunity to give input.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his first supplementary.
Speaker, on Sunday, October 28, I attended a meeting in Havre-Boucher where residents gathered to express their dissatisfaction with the final report of the Boundaries Commission that would put Antigonish County residents east of the Tracadie River in a new riding of East Nova. Councillors and residents felt that they did not have the opportunity to express their dissatisfaction as the revised interim report recommended keeping Antigonish County as a stand-alone riding. In today's issue of the Port Hawkesbury Reporter, the Minister of Transportation Infrastructure Renewal is quoted with the heading, he urged those in attendance to keep up the pressure to save the current Antigonish riding. Quote, write the Premier. Get on the telephone and call people, end quote, said the minister, who also urged residents to sign a petition made available by municipal councillors at the meeting. Quote, quote, let's try and stop this in some way, period. And the only way you're going to do this is to make your voices heard. So my question is that since the Premier is sending the Law Amendments Committee to the riding of the Minister of Environment and Fisheries in Shelburne, will he also send the Law Amendments Committee to Havre-Boucher in the riding of his Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, first thing I'd like to do is congratulate the minister on the representation of his riding. Obviously, he was doing his job, encouraging them to get out. And to make representations, the Law Amendments Committee, of course, is here. It is open to anyone who wants to come and to state their opinion with respect to these proceedings. Of course, that the decision to travel will ultimately be the decision of the committee. But I have to say, I think that in fact, some of the people, as I understand it, who actually attended that meeting, were at some of the meetings by the Electoral Boundaries Commission, but again, we certainly invite them to attend at the committee meetings.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I as well will commend the Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal, because like myself, he actually went in front of the Electoral Boundaries Commission to represent his constituents, unlike the Minister from Shelburne who... At the time, Mr. Speaker, did not make any representations, and based on today, it would appear that he's in time out today as well and unable to speak on behalf of the people for Shelburne as well. Mr. Speaker, the residents of Havre-Boucher are saying that they felt they did not have the opportunity to be able to express concerns over the proposed change based what was on the revised report. The Premier is now telling us it's up to the committee. He knows full well that it's his government that decided Law Amendments Committee would go down to Shelburne. The committee did not meet, it was not asked, and nor was there an opportunity for us to make representation on behalf of people such as those from Havre-Boucher. So I would ask the Premier, in light of all of this, in light of the statements made previously by his Minister of Fisheries and Environment before his time out, will the Premier advise Nova Scotians today that on this very issue, will he allow his backbenchers and his ministers to have a free vote when this bill comes for final consideration?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, there is an independent report that is before the House. We're going to have an opportunity to, and are having an opportunity to debate it fully. As you know, I look forward to all of that debate. I believe the member for Shelburne had an opportunity to already speak with respect to the legislation. And the simple fact of the matter is, Mr. Speaker, this is it's not about the democracy that we operate in, and Mr. Speaker, that's why it is necessary for the Electoral Boundaries Committee to adhere to the terms of reference, and that's why it is incumbent upon us to make sure that we consider that whole report very seriously. And we also consider when the Boundaries Committee did not have an opportunity to hear from people like in Shelburne, that they have an opportunity to have their voice heard.
The Honourable Member for Kings West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health and Wellness. Last Thursday, just prior to all of the flurry that surrounds opening day at the Legislature, the Minister sent out a press release that his government plans to hire 7 auditors who will in turn support other auditors in the districts. According to the release, the hiring of 7 auditors will ensure we receive better frontline health care. Can the Minister please tell the House how the hiring of 7 auditors will provide better frontline health care?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think it's extremely important that Nova Scotians recognize that we need to ensure that the money that they provide government is spent in the most appropriate way. We spend $3.8 billion on the health care budget, Mr. Speaker. I think Nova Scotians would appreciate that an audit is done with the district health authorities across this province.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, we had 2 regional hospitals in the last few weeks who could no longer take patients due to overcrowding. We see patients continue to flood to emergency departments because they don't have access to a family doctor. Collaborative emergency centres that were to be the solution to keep ERs open 24/7 are experiencing closures, not to mention those ERs that are still experiencing closures on a regular basis. And yes, indeed, Mr. Speaker, frontline health workers have lost their jobs under this government, despite what the minister might say. Please tell Nova Scotians how this government can justify the hiring of 7 internal auditors when clearly frontline health care is in chaos.
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The important thing here is to recognize that the taxpayers of Nova Scotia fund the healthcare system here in Nova Scotia. And in ensuring that the $3.8 billion is spent appropriately and that most, if not all, of that money goes to ensuring services for Nova Scotians across Nova Scotia is the key and is extremely important, Mr. Speaker. We're showing leadership by ensuring that audits are done and that the money that we spend here in Nova Scotia on health care is spent in the most appropriate way. We recognize that services across the province have to be adequate. That's why we have plans, Mr. Speaker. Unlike former governments that just did things the way they did for years and years, Mr. Speaker, Liberal governments, Conservative governments, we have a plan, Mr. Speaker, that's better care sooner, and it's going to address the health care needs of Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm sure those that are in long wait lists today are happy about $3 million going down to Cornwallis. I think you'll see something very different. Last week, a spokesperson for the Department of Health and Wellness told media that the cost of the hiring of an additional 7 auditors is close to $750,000, that the money was found in the health budgets to fund the expenditure. Mr. Speaker, this is $750,000 that will be coming out of the healthcare system each and every year, which will be added to an additional internal audit function that already exists in 9 districts. Can the minister please tell us how he does not see this as a duplication of financial administration?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
One of the things, Mr. Speaker, that we take very seriously in the Department of Health is the audits that the Auditor General does. And one of the things we recognize is in implementing and responding to the recommendations of the Auditor General. And this is responding to a direct recommendation from the Auditor General. It's important that Nova Scotians recognize that the government is continuing to invest in not only frontline health care, Mr. Speaker, but in home care, in long-term care. That's why I'm glad to spend an additional $22 million this year on home care support, Mr. Speaker, so that seniors living in their homes across Nova Scotia, especially in rural communities, get the service they need, Mr. Speaker. As I said in my previous answer, this government has a plan. We're not going to do things the way the former governments, Liberals and Conservatives, did for years and years, Mr. Speaker. They had no plan. They just spent money everywhere they thought they needed it, Mr. Speaker. We have a plan. It's called Better Care Sooner, and Nova Scotians will recognize the work we're doing when it comes to health care service in Nova Scotia.
The The Honourable Member for King's West on a new question.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think this next question will tell us exactly how well the former Minister of Health did and what is continuing. Mr. Speaker, while many patients struggle to access health care services, there appears to be a company that is about to embark upon filling the gaps. Medibus is planning to start with 4 vehicles on the road in November and will have 8 units on the road within 8 months. The first 4 months, these units will operate in HRM, Lunenburg County, and in Yarmouth, Digby, Annapolis areas. This service is intended to provide both insured and non-insured healthcare services in a mobile setting throughout Nova Scotia. My question to the Minister, is the Minister aware that Medibus will soon be providing mobile health services in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
No, I'm not, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for King's West on his first supplementary.
Well, I guess perhaps I should start off then, Mr. Speaker, with tabling the Medibus plan for the province. Mr. Speaker, no one is questioning the delivery of mobile health care services. In fact, it has worked in this province in the form of the mobile breast screening started under a Liberal government. Unfortunately, has become significantly reduced under an NDP government. The fundamental question is who will be paying for the insured services? Will patients who access publicly funded healthcare services through Medibus pay for services that are already provided elsewhere in the public health system free of charge, thus creating a two-tier system? Could the Minister please outline all of the funding his government has provided or intends to provide to Medibus for the delivery of mobile healthcare services, including whether government plans to cover the cost of those insured services the company intends to deliver?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And the one thing I can say to the Minister or the member opposite is that the NDP and an NDP government recognize the importance of a single-tier, a publicly funded Medicare system, Mr. Speaker. And we're not going to waver from that, Mr. Speaker. We continue to invest in the publicly funded system here in Nova Scotia. And we recognize that Nova Scotians want us to ensure that they have services provided to them, Mr. Speaker. We're going to continue to do that, and I can guarantee the member opposite that the single-tiered, publicly funded Medicare system will be well protected in Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for King's West on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, accessing health care services has been a frustrating proposition for Nova Scotians. There is indeed a gap that is growing. And would appear that in the absence of any government action, a company has recognized this fact and is about to address these gaps by providing medical services that are both insured and non-insured. My question to the Minister, who will be responsible for monitoring the quality and standards of healthcare services provided by Medibus?
Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And that really is at the essence of the publicly funded healthcare system. We need to ensure that Nova Scotians receive the proper care in the communities that they receive that in, Mr. Speaker. I can't predict when. But I know, and it's not no secret, that we've asked for consultation, went out and got consultation around the Health Insurance Act, Mr. Speaker. And I look forward to the member opposite when I do introduce that piece of legislation to fully support it, because it will protect a publicly funded one-tier Medicare system here in Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question to you is to the Minister of Health and Wellness. Mr. Speaker, as the Minister is aware, the request for proposals for a recovery house in Cape Breton closed recently, and Talbot House in Frenchvale was the sole applicant. Now, the Board of Talbot House was reluctant at first to submit an application based on the government's requirement that any new recovery house use methadone. The Minister must be aware that this is going against the philosophy of Talbot House, which was the last remaining recovery house in the province to not use methadone treatment. So my question through you to the Minister, is the Minister going to insist that methadone treatment be part of whether or not Talbot House is successful, or will he give Talbot House the freedom to use their own method of treatment?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. No question, recovery houses play an important role in helping men and women across our province deal with addictions. They play an important role, and they're one of many services in a suite of services here in Nova Scotia that support and hopefully treat addictions and addiction services here in Nova Scotia. I've said it recently with the recovery houses coming under the Department of Health and Wellness that it's business as usual. I have had the opportunity already to tour one of the recovery houses over in Dartmouth, Freedom Foundation. I was well received there, Mr. Speaker. They do some amazing work, and I've met with some of the clients, some of the residents that live there, and they recognize the important work that they do, and I recognize the important work that recovery houses do here in Nova Scotia and what they provide the men and women here in Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the bottom line is Talbot House worked. Without it, too many families have suffered unfairly. Addiction is a serious problem in this province, and we can't afford to go without Talbot House any longer. It would be a shame if the minister held the requirement to provide methadone above the need for a recovery house. So my question to you, to the minister, would the minister rather see Nova Scotia go without this vital resource than allow Talbot House to go forward with their tested and true treatment philosophy?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As a former healthcare worker, I recognize that there are different ways to treat people here in Nova Scotia. I recognize that, and I keep that at heart, Mr. Speaker. We recognize the importance of recovery houses. That's why we had the RFP extended, which just closed last week. The Department of Health staff are going to do their due diligence in reviewing the RFP and the submissions, Mr. Speaker, under the RFP, and we look forward to making a decision quite soon.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, Cape Breton has been without a recovery house for nearly 8 months. Through the reckless actions of the Minister of Community Services, they closed their doors, and many Nova Scotian families were unable to get accessible treatment for their loved ones. Talbot House's 17-bed facility was successful in changing the lives of men with addictions for more than 50 years. It was effective, trusted, and respected. The minister said a review would be complete by the end of the year. So my question through you to the minister, Mr. Speaker, is, with only one RFP submitted, and the fact that Cape Breton has been without a recovery house for months, will the minister guarantee to open a recovery house in Cape Breton as soon as possible?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I recognize the importance of recovery houses throughout the province and the one that was in Cape Breton. We recognize the importance of that. We know that there are addiction services being provided in Cape Breton currently. And as I said to the minister or the member earlier, we're reviewing the RFP process. We're going to make a decision, and we want to make the right decision to ensure that we can continue to meet the needs of Nova Scotians, especially the needs of men and women in Cape Breton who find themselves struggling with an addiction, Mr. Speaker. I look forward to that process, and I look forward to an announcement soon, hopefully by the end of the year, on this decision here so that we can provide services in Cape Breton as well as the rest of Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Kings West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, on November 5, 2009, Bill 52 was given royal assent in this legislature. At that time, government indicated the bill would provide public accountability to communities and ministerial accountability for emergency departments. Given that legislation points to the fact that a report needs to be tabled annually, I'm not sure whether to ask the former minister or the current, but we'll go with the current. What has prevented a minister from tabling the emergency room accountability report as is mandated by law?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I want to first commend the former Minister of Health here in Nova Scotia. She's worked She's worked extremely hard with the staff within the department to ensure that we change how health care is delivered in Nova Scotia, how we change the government to be more accountable and transparent when it comes to health care here in Nova Scotia. So I want to commend the minister, the former minister of that, and we're going to continue to work with our department and all district health authorities and health clinicians across the province to be transparent and accountable, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his first supplementary.
I don't think this is going to be a good report, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the last emergency room accountability report was tabled on May 19, 2011, 531 days ago today. We now have waited 531 days for this government to once again be accountable to the public as to their success in ensuring all ERs are open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Mr. Speaker, as if it isn't bad enough, Nova Scotians have to wait to access health care services. Now they also have to wait for this government to be accountable. Could the minister outline the specific reasons as to why there has been such a delay in the release of the emergency room accountability report?
Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I said earlier in a response from a previous question, the one thing that we recognized here in Nova Scotia when we came to government in 2009 is that we had to do things differently, especially in health care, Mr. Speaker. And we're doing things differently. We're not doing it the Liberal way, cutting and slashing, firing doctors and nurses, Mr. Speaker. We're not doing it the conservative way, when you just stick your head in the sand and ignore all the issues, Mr. Speaker. We've come up with a plan. It's called Better Care Sooner. We come up with a plan to address emergency room closures like collaborative emergency centres, something, Mr. Speaker, that my colleagues from across the country are looking at and adopting, Mr. Speaker. I'm very proud of that accomplishment.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I think if we gave scrutiny to the system, we'd find many, many gaps and holes. Like 5,000 patients without a doctor in Shelburne, one doctor left in Digby, and on we can go. Mr. Speaker, we are simply asking for this government to be accountable like they said they would. It's no big secret to the numerous communities across this province that they have experienced emergency room closures last year. Many of these same communities are still experiencing emergency room closures today, despite what government promised. Could the minister please tell us when the emergency room accountability report will be tabled?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And no question, there are continue to be issues within the healthcare system. We recognize that. But the one thing we are sure of, Mr. Speaker, is that we're responding to those issues. That's why I was glad to announce today welcoming new doctors to Nova Scotia under the CAP program, Mr. Speaker. All of them practicing in rural communities, Mr. Speaker. That's why I was glad to go meet five new residency doctors down in the valley, down where the members' riding is, Mr. Speaker. Five of them who are doing a new program under the residency program here in Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. All five of them took their training outside Nova Scotia. Four of them are from Nova Scotia, but I got to say, the most exciting one that I talked to was the lady from Ontario, who was from Ottawa, and loves the valley, and has said to me about a month after the program, she's staying here in Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. So we recognize there are still issues within the healthcare system. We're coming forward with a plan. We're implementing that plan, Mr. Speaker. You don't have to go far. You can ask the member from Tatamagoosh on how well that the CEC is being accepted in Tatamagoosh. You can ask the leader of the third party about how the residents of Powersboro like the CEC in Powersboro, Mr. Speaker. That's all I need to reflect, Mr. Speaker. We're going to continue to work. And Annapolis, Mr. Speaker, the leader of the Liberal Party can ask the member or the residents from Annapolis how they like the new model, Mr. Speaker. We're going to continue to work on it.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, the previous Minister of Finance promised a balanced budget in the spring on numerous occasions, and he's now left the new Minister of Finance holding the bag. Yet from day one in her new job, the current Minister of Finance has been backing away from that commitment and tentative in her discussions of it. We're heading yet now to another broken promise. My question for the Minister of Finance is, will the Minister deliver a balanced budget in the spring of 2013?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for the question. I want to take this opportunity to thank the former Minister of Finance for putting us on the right track to a balanced budget. And, Mr. Speaker, I have indicated that we have challenges in front of us, without a doubt. Because of the magnitude of the mess that we inherited from the Rodney MacDonald government, I think that's very well understood, Mr. Speaker. However, I'm very pleased to say that we're working hard, we're on track, we're keeping our eye on where it is we want to be. We have a plan. It is working, Mr. Speaker, and I look forward to tabling a budget in the spring.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on her first supplementary.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians are bracing for deeper and deeper cuts to education, health, and social programs. The NDP has already cut $65 million from education, $100 million from universities, and more than $50 million from health care. And this minister still has to find a further $250 million to even approach balance. Mr. Speaker, the consensus from private sector economists is that the Nova Scotia economy is headed for a downgrade in 2012, that our growth will be just 1.5% growth rather than the higher amount, that 12% less than the Department of Finance had in their estimates for this year's growth. So, Mr. Speaker, and I can table actually the current economic environment document from the Department of Finance. Thanks. Mr. Speaker, will the minister explain exactly how, with an almost 12% downgrade in the GDP growth estimates, how that will affect her balanced budget promise and how much this NDP government will have to cut now from education, health, and social programs?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Member knows full well that this government did not cut $100 million from universities, for example. We did not cut the amounts of money that they say we cut, $65 million from education. It's a ridiculous allegation, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, if you look at the budget numbers, in fact, this government has increased funding in the healthcare system every year that we've been in government, Mr. Speaker. We have, without a doubt, a challenge in front of us. We inherited a mess. We're operating in a period of time when the recovery from the recession has been slower than anticipated. We've taken a very balanced approach to this province's finances, Mr. Speaker. We've imposed temporary tax increases. We've brought spending down. We've been able to bring every department spending in under budget 3 years in a row, Mr. Speaker. We're investing in the economy. We're growing jobs. Mr. Speaker, this is a premier I want on my side when my community is experiencing difficulties. Not that guy over there. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on her final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Finance is boasting about cutting spending in every department, and yet she denies that they've cut $65 million from education, $100 million from universities, and on and on. It's one or the other, Mr. Speaker. It can't be both. Those are the facts. Mr. Speaker, education has been gutted. You can ask the NSTU, you can ask the universities themselves, you can talk to the experts in every field. And not only have we cut costs and expenditures in all of these departments, the NDP have actually abandoned principles that they once held dear. And that must hurt. It must. That's worse. Mr. Speaker, after all these cuts, in the face of all of these cuts and enormous corporate welfare, Those enormous corporate welfare deals as well, it seems the minister can't keep the balanced budget promise. And since she did not answer it the first time, Mr. Speaker, I would like to return to that question and ask the minister that in the face of 8,600 fewer full-time jobs this year and a downgrade from the private sector forecasters of a 12% downgrade in our growth, will the minister tell Nova Scotia if she will keep the government's promise to balance next year's budget?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, I want to tell the Honourable Member what this government will do in difficult times to handle this province's finances is not what that government did in difficult times. We will not impose tolls on the highways of this province. We will not build P3 schools. We will not suspend collective bargaining, Mr. Speaker. We will not send nurses home, Mr. Speaker, and pay them to leave the labour force. Mr. Speaker, we will use a balanced approach. We are on track, Mr. Speaker, and that's the NDP philosophy, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Last month, the folks in Yarmouth and the tourism ministry was encouraged to hear that this government has reversed its long-standing stubborn position on the Yarmouth Ferry. We consider that a win for our community home, for the tourism ministry in the province, and for this opposition caucus who has been fighting for that recognition for the last 3 years. Mr. Speaker, the minister responsible is quoted as saying they're doing this to revitalize southwestern Nova Scotia to bring this ferry back. And my question to the minister is, Mr. Speaker, what took him so long to see the light?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Mr. Speaker, I'm sure that most members, if not all members in this House, will recall when the decision was made about the ferry, we admitted that it was a tough decision. I can recall many times taking my place in this House and saying to all members of the House that we would love to see a ferry in Yarmouth. And Mr. Speaker, that hasn't changed. I am saying the same things now that I said a year ago, 2 years ago, and 3 years ago, that we are willing to invest $21 million over a seven-year period. However, Mr. Speaker, the right conditions have to be in place. And part of the right conditions, Mr. Speaker, include other partners, other stakeholders to be involved, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, those right conditions will be the federal government involvement, Mr. Speaker. Those right conditions will include...
Order, please. The time allotted for oral questions put by members to ministers has expired. I'll now recognize the Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition to call business.
Speaker, could you call Bill 103, please?
Bill 103. The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, it's my pleasure to rise today and to speak on the Bill 103, which is a bill that was introduced by our leader, Stephen McNeil, the leader of the official opposition. And this bill is entitled An Act to Ensure Accountability in Providing Economic Development Assistance in Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, this bill speaks directly to the level of largesse that the NDP government is demonstrating over the last 3 years with corporate handouts,